Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekdays at 9 and 11 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Now, if a four-year college degree isn't your thing, right now, you're just what companies need and want. Earlier this week, NPR News reported that Minnesota's tech colleges are booming as companies seek employees who are skilled in trades and technical work. Listen to what automotive tech instructor Jeff Copeland told reporter Peter Cox about how fast students from Dakota County Tech are getting job offers.
When I first started, somebody would be looking to hire our students more as they were ready to graduate. But it's to the point now where if somebody calls and wants to hire a student of ours, they can't hire that fourth semester student. In many cases, they can't hire a third or even a second. We're referring them that you have to hire somebody that's a first semester student.
Our conversation today, what does this tell us about how the economy is changing and is our culture about education changing along with it? I'd like to hear from you this morning. If you went to a tech or trade school, what would you say about an education culture that largely still emphasizes the four-year degree? I think it would be really interesting to hear from women in the trades as well. And if you work at a company that needs trade and tech people, what are you looking for? So I'm casting a wide net this hour. I want to hear from you if you work in the tech and trades. I want to hear from you if you work at a company that's looking for people with an education on trade and technology. And women, if you're in the field, it would be great to hear from you as well. Here's the phone number, 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, and on Twitter at @CarrieMPR. Jeff Copeland, you heard him in the introduction, is one of our guests. He's an automotive technology instructor at Dakota County Technical College, and he's with us today from Rosemount. And Jeff, welcome. It's good to have you on the show.
Thank you, Carrie. Good morning.
Devinder Malhotra is in the studio with me. He's the Chancellor of Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. Always a pleasure to see you. Thank you so much for coming back.
Thank you, Carrie. And hello, Jeff.
Good morning. How are you today, sir?
Very well.
Chancellor, I think many of us have to modernize our view of what tech and trade education is like. It is, and I know, I think we have to say this, it is not the vo-tech of 30 years ago. But why do you think that perception lingers?
Great question. See, knowledge content over the last 20 or 30 years, the knowledge content of all occupations is increasing. Give you one salient fact. In Minnesota, 75% of the emergent jobs will require some post-secondary credentials. So it's very clear in our minds that we have to provide or meet the workforce shortages at all levels. And that speaks to our strength as a system. We are a system of two-year technical programs, two-year liberal arts programs, and four-year and graduate programs in our universities. We are a system of 30 colleges, two-year colleges, and seven universities. And so it's our challenge now to partner with our K-12 partners and provide the students, emerging students, our pipeline, so to say, all the information which is on all the options and choices which are available to them.
Okay, so I want to make sure I understand what you're saying. I'm suggesting that we need to contemporize our vision of what happens in these trade and technology schools that you're talking about. For some reason, there is still a perception that it is a lesser kind of education. Now, I hear you saying the information, the knowledge you have to be in these fields has changed a lot. Why isn't our perception changing with that?
Yeah, and that's where we have work to do, because sometimes the changes which occur in technology and in occupations. They go faster than perceptions.
Yeah.
And, right. and we have our work cut out there. I'll just give you one story. Peggy Kennedy, who just retired as president of Minnesota State Community and Technical College in Moorhead and Fergus Falls, was sitting in a plane in Fargo, and next to her was a physician from Moorhead. And they started talking, and once he came to know she was president of the two-year college, he said, oh, my son went there. And then he said, I have three children. One went to Vanderbilt, one went somewhere else to another university, and one went to your college. And he said, guess who's making the most money?
I had a feeling that was the moral of this story,
yes,
right?
That yes.
He's doing well in his career.
Yes.
And, yeah.
And indeed, this post-secondary education is really a two-year degree, and particularly a two-year technical degree right now, given the work shortages which exist, is indeed a catalyst to move into the middle class and to sustain the middle class.
Jeff, I also want to ask you about that catalyst. What has happened in Minnesota's economy that has opened up all of this opportunity for students that are coming out of two-year trade and tech schools? I mean, I think this has taken a number of us by surprise. You weren't aware of how modernized the economy was becoming when it comes to trade and tech.
Right. Well, absolutely. And it's certainly not just a Minnesota problem. We're seeing this nationwide. But, you know, since I'm an automotive teacher, let me speak on behalf of an automobile.
Okay.
Darn near everybody drives one nowadays. And if you think about the car that you drive in to work every day, think about the technology that's now in your car. I mean, you have Wi-Fi, you have cellular, you have Bluetooth, you have features like adaptive cruise control, accident mitigation, and we're really, the technology is there, but we're just a couple of years away from having cars that can drive themselves to get you where you need to go. The old technology of the cars that when you started it up, it needed an engine, a transmission, all those things are still on the vehicle, but now you have to add in all of the electronics and all of the computers that go along with that. So cars, and I'll just say, like back in the mid-'80s, I went through a two-year technical college program, and I got an associate's degree and mm-hmm. became an automotive technician. In that 2 years, I had to learn everything that I still teach today. But now over 50% of our curriculum is devoted to electronics. Wow. So we're cramming over twice the content in the same time. So, I mean, hopefully people can realize that all those features that they enjoy on their vehicles really take an enormous amount of training to prepare technicians to be able to diagnose those problems and repair them.
So, Chancellor, do you think it is that technology has... how should I put this, has pressed down into more areas of white and blue collar work? I mean, that is what's changing in Minnesota's economy, that we need more highly specialized and more able people to deal with technology in places that we didn't before.
Yes.
Okay.
Two things to that point, Carrie, you're right on. One is that... as we prepare our students, we have to recognize that we are not only preparing them for your current work and their current needs of the labor market, but we are also preparing them for the jobs which haven't yet been invented, mm-hmm. for the kind of technologies which are on the horizon, which will further disrupt, to Jeff's point, how automobiles are made and how they are maintained. And I think so in that sense, it is very, very important now that you cannot, previously, you could get into these jobs and be successful without any post-secondary credentials. That is becoming increasingly more and more difficult. As Jeff pointed out, as the knowledge content of this work increases, we have to bring in other kinds of expertise which these students and graduates would need in order to be successful in the job market today.
We got a call from Sam in New London who said, we've been trying to fill apprentice roles for years, and one of the key issues is that people don't want to go to a trade school out of high school. A four-year school is still most attractive. Jeff, I'm going to take that apart a bit. Do you find that going right into like an automotive tech program out of high school, you know, that there's a perception where you're making a big decision to, you know, go into this field at a pretty young age? Oh, look, a four-year degree gives you a lot more flexibility. Do you find that there's some resistance to the idea of doing this right out of high school?
Yes and no. I mean, I do spend a great deal of time going in and talking to high school students directly. I talk with administrators, teachers, and I think that that perception is really starting to change, almost like a pendulum swinging from the four-year perception to really seeing the value in two-year degrees. Where I think the lag still remains is with the parents. You know, I commonly hear, well, you know, a technical college degree is okay for a lot of students, but not for mine. My student still needs that four-year degree. And I think that's a lot of the mentality that we're trying to change perceptions on, because so many of these skilled trades are not dirty jobs. They are very clean work environments. They're a lot of soft skills are needed for these. There's so much communication, and these are all skills that we have to develop in the young people right alongside the technical skills.
Yeah, Chancellor, and that's something I wanted to ask you about, is there is this idea that when you get a four-year degree, you're not only being prepared for the job or the master's degree, you're also somebody who's got the kind of flexibility and nimbleness to think. You're learning critical thinking skills. There may be this perception that, hey, you take a two-year degree on a trade or technology, and it's really all about the job you're going to be doing after that, and you're not learning these other less tangible skills. Is there something to that?
No. In fact, to the contrary, you know, to your earlier point, there are no blue-collar or white-collar jobs now. They're all gray-collar.
And did you say gray-collar?
Yes.
Yeah.
They're
How
all,
so?
Partly because, just like the caller just pointed out, that the job environment itself, the work environment itself, has changed very dramatically. And these are highly skilled jobs now, which used to be, you know, environment which was very mechanical, very, very difficult. Now everything is electronic. These are clean environments. But the line between two-year and a four-year degree is also blurring. Just because you go and get a two-year degree doesn't mean that all your options in moving further, if you want to change a career, have been closed. You can still, if you get a two-year technical degree, there are options right now in our system where a two-year student can then go along if they so desire and get a four-year engineering degree, or get into other occupations if they so desire, where they can build on the foundation they have gotten with a two-year degree.
You're listening to a conversation this morning where we're talking about the demand for two-year trade and tech degrees and the way Minnesota's system of trade and tech schools is being required willingly to step up and educate more people that can go into these fields. So we're talking about what it is about the Minnesota economy that has changed and has created this demand. And I think it'd be valuable to hear from you. If you went to a tech or trade school, what would you say about, you know, the education culture that we're talking about right now that still values the four-year degree? I'd like to know about your experience in that education setting and now what you're doing with that work. And women, would be great to hear from you too. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, and on Twitter at CarrieMPR to Rhea in Duluth. Hi. Good to have you call.
Hi there.
You heard my call to women. Glad you called.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually work for an AmeriCorps program as a staff person. It's called Northern Bedrock Historic Preservation Corps.
Okay.
And we teach young people preservation trades, hands-on skills. So our goal is to help get young people into the trades. So, and we do a focus on historic preservation, working on historic structures.
Yeah, so let me understand this. When a student signs on to the program, they are working on some kind of building, and I mean they're learning all the skills that you would need to restore or maintain a building, a historic building. Is that right?
That's correct. And they don't need to be students. It's young people 18 to 25. Who can sign up for our program as an AmeriCorps member. We do a lot of skill training that includes some of those soft skills you guys were talking about. They work in crews. So they work 8 days on with the same group of people, and then they have 6 days off. So it's a pretty intensive program, but we try our best to get people excited about working with their hands.
So, Rhea, I'm just curious about how you found yourself in the position to run this. I mean, do you have a lot of these skills? You do, too.
I do. While that's not my current capacity, I did two technical diplomas, one in cabinetry and one in welding. And previous to that, I'm an undergrad in community and nonprofit leadership. So bringing together trade skills, bringing women into the trades, and working with this nonprofit, it's been an amazing combination.
Super interesting. Really glad you called. And you've actually brought up something that I wanted to talk to Jeff and Devinder about. Jeff, what about apprenticeship? Sooner or later in these shows, somebody calls to say, why don't we do it like Germany does it? You know, we direct people out of high school and they come in and they do apprenticeships and then they're ready for this. What do you think about the value of apprenticeships as opposed to specifically getting into these programs?
I think that they are very valuable. Let me give you an example. If we have a high school student that just graduates and comes into our program, they're typically going to be 18 years old. They'll start in our program, and they'll be going to school typically about 25 hours, maybe 28 hours a week here on campus.
Uh-huh.
Now, because the demand is so high in our industry, those students are getting multiple job offers to start working part-time as soon as they start into our program.
Are you kidding? So, much as we heard in Peter Cox's story, even first semesters in the program, there are job offers waiting for them?
Oh, absolutely, Carrie.
Wow.
And the fact is that we're not able to meet the demand right now. This is like a tidal wave that's coming on, and it's not just automotive. It's carpentry, it's plumbing, it's electrical, it's heavy duty truck. The demand is so big right now that many employers are actually recruiting directly in the high schools, and they're trying to employ new young people right into their companies straight out of high school.
Wow.
So, because they need the bodies there, and then they're having to train them on the job. Now, it is a good option. It helps fill their workforce, but the problem is now they're bringing in a lot of young people that, first of all, aren't sure what their career path really needs to look like.
Got it.
And they're being asked to do tasks that are very high level in many cases, and they don't have the training. So now we're in danger of having those skills, or somebody working on your car, for example, that has very minimal training. You're putting your life in their hands in many cases. And, you know, not to scare anybody, anything like that. They still receive training. But as you see the last of our baby boomer generation push into retirement, those people now who are 55 to 65 hold those highest skill jobs in many of the industries across the state.
Well, so
they're
Jeff,
the ones that.
Yeah, I mean, this is a really good point with you bringing up the demographics of this. Devinder, I assume you saw this coming, right? You study this kind of stuff. How did you think about what was going to happen when the demand really started to build, which is where we are right now? And it hasn't peaked, right?
Sure. Great question, Carrie. You know, currently, last year, we graduated from Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, 38,000 students. So we put out 38,000 individuals with fresh credentials into the labor market. Out of that, two-thirds of the graduates came from our two-year colleges.
Okay.
And of the graduates from two-year colleges, almost 70% were in career and technical education programs. So we put out last year close to 18,000 to 19,000 fresh credentialed individuals in the market. As large that size and scope of that impact is, it is nowhere close to what is needed. Over the next 10 years, there would be 1.3 million additional jobs in the state of Minnesota. That means every year there are about 136,000 additional jobs which are needed. And Minnesota State itself is putting out about 40,000. And so it just tells you that how great that enormous that challenge is. And in order to meet this challenge, we in educational institutions, we can't do it alone. We have to have partnerships on one side with K-12 to build up the pipeline, to provide the information and provide career technical pathways so that those students recognize that these are viable, well-paying jobs which are available in these areas. And on the other side, we need to extend the learning landscape beyond our classrooms and our institutions into the workplace. And that's where the importance of apprenticeships and internships comes about. And at the same time, we also have to recognize that learning doesn't occur just in the classroom. It occurs in the workplace too. So we need to figure out in higher education as to how do we validate all of the learning, no matter where it exists.
The thing I'm curious about just quickly here before we get to news, were you at the state legislature 5 years ago, 7 years ago? I know you're going to be there in the winter saying, look, we have this demand.
Sure.
But were you there in years past saying this demand is building, we can see it coming, and we need to be able to meet it? And in some ways, you know, still competing with the U of M for limited resources, yeah.
No, that's true. I mean, in fact, I think we have been making that case. But the irony is that as this tsunami was coming on,
yeah,
at the same time, there were public disinvestments in higher education.
Yeah, absolutely. State of Minnesota.
And particularly from that perspective, that makes the challenge even more. And that's why our biennial request this year is much higher than the historical levels we are asking for. And we are precisely, we are asking for that is because there is a certain level of immediacy and urgency and anxiety because we need to make some strategic investments to build our capacity to meet this need.
Legislators, get ready for that in January. Devinder Malhotra is with us. He's the chancellor of Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. And Jeff Copeland is with us. He's an automotive technology instructor at Dakota County Tech College, talking this morning about the demand for technical and trade education. And in a culture where a lot of the investment and a lot of the perception has been, you got to have that four-year degree. What are we seeing about how the Minnesota economy is changing and how it has built this tsunami that Devinder talks about? Back to our conversation now. Devinder Malhotra with us, chancellor at Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. Jeff Copeland with us from Dakota County Technical College, and to the phones to Michelle in Minneapolis. Hi, Michelle. Thanks for waiting.
Hello.
Hi. What's your story with this?
My story is that I'm a retired carpenter. I'm 62 years old, and I actually did not go to trade school. I started out as a laborer and worked my way up to a finished carpenter. And I can build a house from this, from ground up to the top.
Excellent.
And then I went to, and I did get a college degree. I went on and got a college degree, and then I taught for 5 years at the Shakopee Correctional Facility for Women, construction technology. And I've always lamented how little attention has been given to an encouragement to young people to consider, to consider the trades, because many of us don't want a desk job. We want to work outside. We want to work with our hands and our body. And the truth about the construction trades or any of the trades is that you need to be know how to organize. You need to know how to delegate and to problem solve and to know math. And it really requires a lot of diverse skills. And I'm so happy to hear this conversation happening now because As we all know, there's a dearth of people who know how to fix things. And so I'm just really happy to hear this conversation, and I want to support it in every way I can.
Are you, Michelle, I think you said you're retired now from
yes.
carpentry work? Okay.
Yes, I'm retired. And I'd like to add one thing. Is
sure.
that the skills that I learned allowed me to, I was able to get a loan and buy a house at an early age, and the skills that I had and the confidence I had to work with my hands, I was able to refurnish and remodel a house and then sell it. And then I've used the skills. Now I have a couple of rentals, and I can fix
wow.
things that are broken. And it's because I've been able to retire early because of these skills. And
yeah.
so I want, and my husband is a master mechanic. He went to Dunwoody, and the same story. So I really want to encourage
Boy, this
young
is for
people
you. Yeah.
To explore these all the technical options out there today.
Appreciate the call. Jeff, I feel like Michelle was speaking right to some of the parents that you encounter who say, yes, I know my kid wants to work outside or work with his or her hands, but they can always go back to that later. I want them to get the 4-year degree. To that, you say what?
I tell you that my students can graduate in 2 years. They can work from day one when they're coming through. They're going to graduate with zero debt. And in many cases, in 2 years, they'll be making over $50,000 a year by the time they complete graduation. So it's a great way. Maybe instead of going to 4 years first, try going to 2 years first. And then if you want to continue on with your 4-year degree, by all means, add that in. But I think that the mindset should be get to work a little bit sooner. Let's not build up $50,000 or $100,000 worth of debt. And then let's make a plan for what really makes sense when we pick that 4-year degree.
Yeah. So, Devinder, I'm hearing from a number of people on Twitter who are saying things like, Cookie, I got an associate degree in respiratory therapy in Wisconsin, came to work at the U of M hospital, got tuition reimbursement to get my BS and then my MSW, got a great education, but stayed in respiratory therapy to make my living with that tech school degree. I wonder if part of the appeal here is also you're on a career track you don't love. Here's a way without spending another 4 years of your life to come in and get these kind of skills. How much of your student population do you think fits that?
Actually, a lot. In some ways, we meet the needs of post-secondary education over the life cycle of the individual.
This is what you were saying about learning the lifelong perspective.
Exactly, because anybody entering the job market today, on the average, is likely to change careers twice and jobs maybe 3 to 5 times on the average. And so what is happening is that we can teach these students in 2 years or 4 years all they need to know. And so we have
right.
to be ready. We have to be ready for the over the life cycle of the individual. That's why there is right now a conversation going on where we want, instead of tuition, we want to move to a subscription model. You know, where you give a lifetime subscription.
I love
subscription,
the idea of that.
A
right.
lifetime subscription, and then you can come back. And obviously, a lot has to occur in terms of our business models and in terms of policy commitment to public higher education, where we get to that point. But to your point, I think what we are hearing is that, A, on one hand, we need to provide these students who are trying to make a decision as to which career paths to take, provide information which will give them all the options and so they can evaluate how they match to their own passion and their inner calling. And secondly, once they have done that, we have to make sure that our educational institutions, both at K-12 and in higher education, are ready then to provide the kind of education they need in order to pursue those careers.
I should ask you what you mean by that, because you've mentioned K-12 a couple of times. What's not happening in the K-12 education system that would fit in with this?
Yeah, it's not necessarily what is happening in K-12, because I was responding to the fact that parents have a certain perception
yes.
that they are forcing students to go in one particular direction. Now, if we are going to alter that, then we have to engage the parents and the students while they are in K-12, and so that we can lay out a menu of options in front of them, and then they make the decision. I think it would be a mistake from a policy perspective to just frame this problem as a problem between 2-year and 4-year. This problem is a lot more as to what is the option set available there, and so that the career and technical education programs are also appropriately positioned when somebody is making their career choices.
Hey, Jeff, I really appreciate the benefit of your teaching experience and your interaction with parents and the discussion. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Jeff Copeland with us in this conversation, Dakota County Technical College, where he's an automotive technology instructor, and Devinder Malhotra with us, Chancellor of the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, as we talk about this changing economy and the demand for trade and tech education. To Christina in Houghton. Hi, Christina. How does this fit with your decisions and experience?
Hi. I actually went to college for and got a master's degree in applied ecology and environmental science. Unfortunately, I graduated when the recession was going on, and I couldn't find a job.
Okay.
And so I started working with my partner, Neil, in construction and the trades. And having done both, working in the lab, I did genetic analysis on aspen clonal colonies. And working on a house and doing remodeling projects, it is much more challenging and fulfilling for me to be doing construction.
That's, there might be more overlap than we would first expect, too, between the two, right? Attention to detail.
And I did a lot of soil analyses, too, and that really helps with foundation work. And knowing what considerations you need to make, if you could go online to the soil survey, the International Soil Survey, you can find out things like concrete conditions for the soil, like building on, and a ton of other stuff. So I've really been able to add a lot of environmental knowledge to the field.
I'm really glad you heard the show and you had a chance to call in, Christina. Thanks much.
I'm really glad you guys are talking about it. It's great.
Yeah. Kaylin says on Twitter, I graduated in 14 with a 4-year BA in theater performance. Then I decided to go back to school for a 2-year associate's degree as a physical therapist assistant at Anoka Ramsey Community College. Grateful for the experiences from both degrees, and I'm fortunate to have the resources to do this. To the phones to Glenn in Minneapolis. Hey, Glenn. Hi. What's your story on this?
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I am, like your other guests, I am thrilled that you are having this conversation, in particular because of what both of your commentators here have just said on the subject. It speaks directly to my question. I'm 39 years old. 2 years ago, I left a job that I enjoyed because I wanted to try and advance myself in my field, in my career. I unfortunately have spent the better part of those 2 years unemployed and have spent a lot of time thinking about going back to school. Now, I followed the standard model when I graduated, you know, when I left high school, go to college, 4 years. It took me a long time to get my 4-year degree. Mm-hmm. I spent a lot of time working and in and out of school trying to figure out what I wanted to do. I have been thought of going back to school. I know that the program today is targeted towards young people, but I'm wondering how this would apply to people trying for a second career. What value would there be to someone like me to go back and get a 2-year degree in
Glenn,
a trade?
This is you. This is exactly what part of this conversation is about. So let me turn this over to Devinder.
Glenn, you would be surprised that the average age in many of our colleges is well above 25, and also almost third of our student body is 25 years or above. And so you are more than welcome in any of our 30 colleges and 37 colleges and universities. I urge you to go to www.minstate.edu and where you can get all the information about what programs are available where. And I hope you make the choices which speak to your passion and you are successful going forward.
What you're really saying is you are probably not going to be sitting in a classroom with a bunch of brand new high school grads, right? Yeah. You will find people at any point on the arc of their careers there.
Yes.
I think you're saying.
To that point, I must tell you also, for example, we have 10,000 veterans in our colleges and universities. So it's not unusual to find students who have prior experience. Many of even our younger students, they are simultaneously working, as Jeff was earlier pointing out, that in first semester of their college, they get a job. And so they are working in the workplace and going at this simultaneously to college. So no, you won't be the only one, and you will fit right in.
You know, I had a question about graduation rates because, as you pointed out, the Minnesota State Colleges and University System has four-year universities in it, but also these two-year programs. So how do the graduation rates compare between those four-year schools and the two-year programs, which I know is a little bit of not an apple to apple, but
yeah.
But how do you account for that?
Yeah, you know, actually, again, I think the problem is not necessarily in the academic experience of the student,
uh-huh,
in the differentials in graduation rates. The problem is that our colleges and universities draw students who are from economically fragile communities, from communities which historically have had low participation rates in higher education. For example, we have 65,000 students of color or of native origins. That is more than the whole enrollment of all the private colleges and universities in the state of Minnesota. As similarly, we have 74,000 students who are on low income families with family incomes of 85,000 or less, 50,000 first generation students. So what happens is, in their case, as they are going through, because of their economic fragility, life happens. You know, a $500 or $1,000 difference between their ability to pay and what they need in order to pursue the education could make a decision whether they drop out or not, even though they are in good academic standing. So I think by shoring up the affordability of our students, by shoring up the support, financial support for our students, we will find our graduation rates going up dramatically, both in our colleges and universities.
It's the kind of question you'll get at the state legislature, and I wish you well in January with your request for lots of money. Devinder, it is always a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for coming in.
This was a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. To add your voice to our discussion, you can call in at 800-242-2828 or tweet Kerri at @KERRINPR. And if you miss us live, you'll find all of our shows by subscribing to this podcast. If you have questions, you can email us at talk@npr.org.